Our study at this time continues in the 28th chapter of Deuteronomy. Last time we'd gotten through the 24th verse, and we will begin with the 25th verse. The subject of this chapter is that God is explaining the causes and the extent of the curses, as well as the blessings. The first 14 verses has to do with explaining about the blessings, and then beginning with the 15th verse to the end of the chapter, he talks about the curses. And last time we had gotten into the area of the curses, and many of the curses had been mentioned. We saw the great extent of the curses. He says in the 15th verse, "But it shall come to pass, if thou wilt not hearken to the voice of the Lord thy God, to observe to do all his commandments and his statutes, which I command thee this day, that all these curses shall come upon thee and overtake thee. Curses shall be in the city, and curses shall be in the field. Cursed shall be thy basket and thy store. Cursed shall be the fruit of thy body, and the fruit of thy land, the increase of thy kind, and the flocks of thy sheep. Cursed shalt thou be when thou comest in, and cursed shalt thou be when thou goest out. And the Lord shall send upon thee cursing, vexation, and rebuke, and all that thou settest thy hand unto for to do, until thou be destroyed, and until thou perish quickly, because of the wickedness of thy ways, whereby thou hast forsaken me." And he goes on and shows then how that these curses are very extensive. They're going to be involved in every place that the person goes, or everything the person has, or everything the person does, who does not obey the commands of the Lord, who goes aside to other gods, who serves other gods, and who does not hearken to the true commands of God. So as we move into the 25th verse, "The Lord shall cause thee to be smitten before thine enemies. Thou shalt go out one way against them, and flee seven ways before them, and shalt be removed into all the kingdoms of the earth." Notice this is just the opposite of the blessing. The blessing said that the enemies would come against them one way and would flee against them, away from them seven ways. But the curse says that thou shalt go out one way against them, that is against the enemies, and flee seven ways before them. So that there would just be no way that they'd be able to withstand any kind of attack by the enemy. They could not return the attack. They couldn't defend themselves. They couldn't be aggressive or defensive. And then he says after the colon, thou shalt be removed into all the kingdoms of the earth. Now that's a prophecy showing that this people would eventually be carried away from their land as captives. They'd be carried captives to other kingdoms. And he says, into all the kingdoms of the earth, showing that eventually they did go to all the kingdoms of the earth. And there is and most nations of the earth give evidence of there having been some Jewish culture there at some time or another, if not all nations of the earth, showing that there is hardly a place on the face of the earth that Jewish people had not been scattered to. The immediate fulfillment of this prophecy had to do with the eventual carrying away into captivity of Israel, and then some 200 years later, Judah was carried into captivity. Israel was carried to captivity by the Assyrians, and Judah was carried into captivity by the Babylonians. And from that captivity of these two nations, Israel and Judah, the people then were scattered into all parts of the earth, all the kingdoms of the earth. And this prophecy says that that will happen. I'd like to read from 2 Kings 17 the account of the carrying away into captivity of Israel, that is the northern kingdom, and that was the kingdom that was carried into captivity first. Beginning in 2 Kings 17 with the 6th verse, "In the ninth year of Hoshea, the king of Assyria took Samaria and carried Israel away into Assyria and placed them in Halah and in Habor by the river Gozan and in the city of the Medes," or in the cities of the Medes. "For so it was that the children of Israel had sinned against the Lord their God, which had brought them up out of the land of Egypt from under the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and had feared other gods and walked in the statutes of the heathen whom the Lord cast out from before the children of Israel, and of the kings of Israel, which they had made. And the children of Israel did secretly those things that were not right against the Lord their God. And they built them high places in all their cities, from the tower of the watchman to the fenced city. And they set them up images, and groves, and every high hill, and under every green tree. And there they burnt incense in all the high places, as did the heathen, whom the Lord carried away before them, and wrought wicked things to provoke the Lord to anger. For they served idols, whereof the Lord had said unto them, Ye shall not do this thing. And we see a very similar thing said about Judah in the 2 Kings, the 25th chapter, about the 21st verse, when they were carried away into captivity into Babylon. So the point is, this prophecy said that if they didn't obey God, he would bring these curses upon them. One of the curses was that they should be removed into all the kingdoms of the earth, and he just flatly says that in plain language. And then we see when we study the history of the Jewish people given in the Bible, in the book of Kings, that this very thing did happen that very way. And so these curses were very real. They did happen to those who disobeyed. And unfortunately, both kingdoms, Judah and Israel, did disobey. And consequently, they suffered the supreme curse of being carried away from their lands. And we'll hear more about that as we go on in this chapter. And verse 26, And thy carcasses shall be meat unto all fowls of the air, and unto the beasts of the earth, and no man shall fray them away. Now this can have a figurative and a literal meaning, figuratively and spiritually. As this nation and as these individual people are in distress, their carcasses should be meat unto all the fowls of the air, that is, all the other nations round about them would prey upon them. Even Idumea to the south was helping Babylon in their captivity of Judah. And so they would be like fowls of the air preying upon their carcasses. And of course, the beasts of the earth would be also symbolic of this. And no man shall fray them away. There'll be nobody there to protect you, nobody to take your part, nobody to keep them from running over you and doing those things. This could also have a very literal meaning in that there were many people killed during this time, and there wasn't enough respect for the bodies to even bury them or give them any kind of a funeral. And so they were left for the beast and the fowls of the air to devour. And we can see spiritually how that as this great spiritual nation with its priesthood and temple and all the holy worship of God, as they degenerated, that then it became a carcass for the idolaters of the world to overrun. They took the articles of the temple, the gold from the temple, and carried it into Babylon and put it into the king's castle there, who knew nothing of the true and living God. So many shades of meaning can be derived from that 26th verse. Verse 27, now he begins to tell some other curses that will come in the form of bodily diseases. The Lord will smite thee with the botch of Egypt, and with the emrods, and with the scab, and with the itch, whereof thou canst not be healed. It seems that there were some diseases that were just among the sinful nations like Egypt, and that God's people didn't experience these diseases. But now that they're going to be experiencing this curse of God, they will experience these diseases. And it's a little hard to know just exactly what is meant here by the individual words. We'll try to give some explanation for them, but the main idea is that they're going to be diseases that would afflict the body and bring about punishment or suffering and death. He will smite thee with the botch of Egypt. Now this word botch means inflammation. And when something is inflamed, it means that it is hot, it is red, it is swollen, and it's tender. That's what an inflamed area is. And many diseases can produce this kind of an effect. So whatever this botch of Egypt was, it brought about an inflammation. And with the emrods, and the word emrods, his future means boils, and what we would call abscesses or infections, boils, and with the scab, and the word scab is also translated as scurvy, and with the itch, and the word itch is self-explanatory, whereof thou canst not be healed. Now these are diseases that would be either chronic diseases that they would keep for a long time, or acute diseases that would bring about their demise, but in either way, there would not be a healing. There's no cure, no remedy for them. So these are terminal diseases, or at least are diseases that would plague them for the rest of their life, once they got it. And then in verse 28, the Lord shall smite thee with madness and blindness and astonishment of heart. Now here, their mind is going to be affected. Madness is, affects their ability to reason. They would, no doubt, in a condition like this, have delusions, that is, false beliefs. They believe something happened and it didn't happen. They believe that certain events were going to occur or had occurred, and they really hadn't occurred at all. Delusions. We know today that God has promised that those who do not have a love of the truth, He'll send them a strong delusion. Also, madness would include hallucinations, and a hallucination is a false vision. You think you've seen something, you think you've experienced something, and you really haven't. Hallucinations and delusions. In the area of spiritual diseases, man can have hallucinations. He can think that he's seen something. He can think he's been smitten down by the Holy Spirit, that he has seen visions from God, and really he hasn't seen anything of the kind. But he can be deluded into thinking that this has happened. So shall smite thee with madness and blindness. Blindness is a condition literally where you can't see, but figuratively and spiritually it could be a condition in which you were unable to ascertain the truth. You couldn't see or comprehend that which was reality around about you. And then he says astonishment of heart. The word astonishment means wonder. You're going to be in such a condition that your heart is, or your mind is going to be made to have great wonder or great astonishment. You're going to see things. You're going to experience things. They're going to make you be put in awe. You'll be put in wonderment. It will be something like you never experienced before. New way out experiences. And you know, one strange thing in the modern day is that one of the things that man seems to want and desire greatly is to be put in a state where he has astonishment of heart. Those who make movies for man's enjoyment, and most of them are not fit for human consumption, but they found that if they'll make some kind of a picture or story in which the things are really not real, things are on the very verge of being way out of reality, so that man is who watches this is terrified. He is kept on in a constant state of anxiety and tension and afraid of what's going to happen. People want to be thrilled with all kinds of gory stories, stories of murder and horror things, of beings that do not exist. And this is what man tends to turn to. And God said, and here, one of the curses on Israel would be that they should be smitten with this astonishment of heart. And it makes you wonder if our people today haven't gone so far that this is what they're turning to now, is astonishment of heart rather than to reality. Verse 29, and thou shalt grope at noonday, as the blind gropeth in darkness. And thou shalt not prosper in thy ways, and thou shalt be only oppressed and spoiled evermore, and no man shall save thee. So that's another condition they'll have, blindness. Whether it means literal blindness or whether it means figurative blindness, the results are going to essentially be the same. Thou shalt grope at noonday as the blind gropeth in darkness. When the bright light is shining and everybody should be able to see, you're going to be like somebody who's in darkness. You can't see. And thou shalt not prosper in thy ways. Whichever way you take, whatever profession, whatever occupation, whatever job you set about to do, it'll not be something that's going to give you prosperity. You shall not prosper in thy ways, and thou shalt be only oppressed and spoiled evermore. That's all you can look forward to is oppression and being spoiled. And no man shall say that you can't get a king or an elder or a ruler that is wise enough, that is powerful enough to bring you out of it. You and your nation are doomed to be ruined when you disobey God and when you have this curse brought up on you. He further explains some sad details in verse 30. Thou shalt betroth a wife, and another man shall lie with her. Thou shalt build an house, and thou shalt not dwell therein. Thou shalt plant a vineyard, and shalt not gather the grapes thereof. So they'll be stripped of their possessions. And he mentions a number of things here that are examples of how this could happen. The very idea of marrying a wife and then have another man to lay with her. Building a house and not being able to live in it. And we've all, who are adults, have experienced things like this. We've married, and we know how it would be with us if we had to have our companion to lay with someone else. We knew it was going to happen before we ever married them. It was promised through the curse. Or if we build a house, go to all the trouble of building a house, and then you don't get to live in it. Somebody else takes it away from you, and you don't get to live in it. Thou shalt plant a vineyard, and shalt not gather the grapes thereof. Thine ox shall be slain before thine eyes, and thou shalt not eat thereof. I hear you've raised this ox, he's your possession, you've got all the investment in him, the work, the time, the money, and yet somebody else slays him, and you don't get to eat anything. They do all the partaking of the oxen. Thine ass shall be violently taken away from before thy face, and shall not be restored to thee. Now the ass was an animal that was a valuable animal. It's one of the ways they made their living, by using animals of this nature, and he's just taken away from you. It'd be like today if somebody came and got in your car and drove it off. You watched them right before your face. They drive it off, take it away from you, and there's nothing you can do about it. There goes your car. All the work, all the labor, everything, all the importance it is to you, your way of making a living, your way of getting back and forth to work, gone. Thy sheep shall be given unto thine enemies, and thou shalt have none to rescue them. Now these things no doubt happened to them very literally in the last days of the before the captivity. When the enemy moved in, all their dearest possessions, right down to their house, their wives, everything that they had was taken away from them. In verse 32, thy sons and thy daughters shall be given unto another people. Now, this could mean literally the time in which the sons and the daughters were carried away captive into Babylon. It could also mean the fact that the sons and the daughters would be led away through the false teaching of the wicked, for the false teaching of the idolaters, and consequently, they'd be taken away to another people. Just as today, when we lose our sons and daughters out of the church, when the devil has something more enticing for them than the church, and they turn in that direction, we've lost them to another people. We've lost them to another nation. And he says, and thine eyes shall look and fail with longing for them all the day long. You're going to look for them to return. You're going to want to see them again. And your eyes are going to be so used and so tired from looking for those children to return, until he says they shall fail with longing for them all the day long. Oh, what a sad condition this is. And of course, God knows the feelings of humans. And he knows the things that are going to make them so sad, the things that will make them so contrite, that will bring them low, because they need to be punished. That's what the purpose of these curses actually are. And one of the punishments there is going to be thy sons and thy daughters shall be given to another people. And oh, how sad it is today for us to look and see our sons and our daughters running after another people. We mentioned a few moments ago about those who make the movies. I don't think they're not a Pied Piper trying to lure your sons and daughters away, and they will if they can. Those who make the lewd songs, the so-called rock music group and others kin to them, are very definitely in the business to lure the sons and the daughters into another culture, into the drug culture, into the culture of immorality, and into the culture of worshiping Satan. And when we lose our sons and daughters to that, what a loss it is, and how we can long for them to come back. Our eyes may grow weary. Our eyes may fail with longing for them all the day long, and yet they may never come back because we've allowed these other people to take them away from us. And he says, and there shall be no might in thine hand. That is, you won't have any strength. You're not going to be able to do anything to prevent this. You will have lost your strength. Verse 33, the fruit of thy land and all thy labors shall a nation which thou knowest not eat up, and thou shalt be only oppressed and crushed alway. So their land, the thing that they produced of the land, all their labors, all the houses they built, the walls around the cities, the temple, it matters not, whatever they've done in the way of labors, a nation which thou knowest not shall eat up. And that nation, of course, was eventually Assyria to the north and Babylon to the south. And thou shalt be only oppressed and crushed always, so that thou shalt be mad for the sight of thine eyes which thou shalt see. Now the things you're going to see, the sight of your eyes, is going to make you mad. That is, you're going to be out of reason. You're going to be unable to cope. You'll not be able to deal with this great momentous event that's going to happen. The thing that you see, when you see somebody lead your oxen away, and you see somebody lead your ass away and slay your oxen before your eyes, and take your family away, your children, your wives, take all that you have, your house, your vineyard, your crop. Then what your eyes see are going to make you mad, going to make you out of reason. These, of course, are things that happen to people who walk only by sight, who really have no spiritual insight, who do not see things from a spiritual standpoint. They only see the things that are materialistic, and whenever these are gone from them, they lose their reason. They're no longer able to cope with that situation. Then again in verse 35, he talks about bodily diseases. The Lord shall smite thee in the knees and in the legs with a sore botch that cannot be healed, from the sole of thy foot under the top of thy head. Here again we know that the word botch means inflammation, and so it's some kind of an inflammatory disease from the head to the foot which could not be healed, that the Lord would smite them with. We think of people like Job when we think of this. We know that there have been times in places other than Israel in which the great plagues have come and taken over and just practically wiped out a whole population of people, and they were powerless to do anything about it. Verse 36, the Lord shall bring thee and the king which thou hast set over thee unto a nation which neither thou nor thy fathers have known. Now this nation that they were brought to was going to be Assyria to the north and Babylon to the south. And eventually Assyria would be combined with Babylon, so that it was really one great power that had all of God's people. And he says that the Lord will bring thee to this nation. Bring thee and the king which thou shalt set over thee unto this nation, which neither thy fathers nor thee have known. And there thou shalt serve other gods, wood and stone. Notice one of the great ironies here. And there thou shalt serve other gods, wood and stone. The primary reason that the people were carried into captivity is because they left the true and living God, because they began to serve the gods and to fear the gods of the other nations round about them, gods that were not true gods, gods that were idolaters. And so then because of that, they were carried into captivity. But once they got into captivity, he said, there thou shalt serve other gods. In other words, it seemed that God was going to let them and even make them learn the true lesson of idolatry. He would make them serve other gods, or at least allow them to serve other gods, because they wouldn't have the true and living God to serve once they had so soundly rejected him. Now, God didn't forget his people while in captivity. He continued to deal with them, and he let them have the full punishment. The 70 years in captivity to the south, before they were allowed to return. Verse 37, and thou shalt become an astonishment, a proverb, and a byword among all nations, whither the Lord shall lead thee. So in all these nations in which they would go, and it would be most, if not all, of the nations of the world, eventually, they would have a bad reputation. They would have a name that would be a byword, or a proverb, or an astonishment. And the name Jew, still even today, in many places, has these connotations. The Jewish people are looked down upon just because they have the name Jew. And that's one of the curses that God promised that they would have, which they still even yet today bear in a very large capacity. And so we see the great far-reaching fulfillment of this prophecy about the curse. Verse 38, thou shalt carry much seed out into the field, and shalt gather but little in, for the locusts shall consume it. Here again, showing that in everything they did, the curse would be there. Thou shalt plant vineyards and dress them, but thou shalt not drink of the wine nor gather the grapes, for the worm shall eat them. Thou shalt have olive trees throughout all thy coasts, but thou shalt not anoint thyself with the oil, for thine olive shall cast its fruit. So the olive trees that they'd have wouldn't even produce any fruit. Thou shalt beget sons and daughters, but thou shalt not enjoy them, for they shall go into captivity. Again, another prophecy stating quite plainly now about the captivity. So the sons and daughters would go into captivity. All thy trees and the fruit of thy land shall the locusts consume. Here again, showing that they just wouldn't be able to have any productive fruit. The stranger that is within thee shall get up above thee very high, and thou shalt come down very low. Just the opposite of the blessing. In the blessing, God's people would be high, and the other would be low. Now, God's people are low, and the stranger's high. He shall lend to thee, and thou shalt not lend to him. He shall be the head, and thou shalt be the tail. Again, showing the very reverse of the blessings when the curse came about. During the period right after the actual captivity into Babylon, they were ruled over by strangers. And these strangers insulted them. You can see then how that this thing was so very literally fulfilled. So let us again be reminded of the very great reality of these curses. They did happen because the people disobeyed God. God promised them that they would come, and they came. And so we today need to realize that this is still the same God that we're dealing with. And many of these laws that he had then, he has today. And God's not going to take the disobedience of these laws lightly. He may not have the same curses today that he had then. We may not be cursed in the same way that they were then. But nevertheless, sooner or later, God's going to bring about a retribution. Every disobedience that's not forgiven is going to have a punishment. And by the same token, the blessings also come from this same God. And the blessings are very much a reality. And when we obey God, then we can expect to have the benefit of the blessing, just as surely as we can know that there is a God. Now as we continue through this 28th chapter of Deuteronomy, in the 45th verse, the prophecy takes a turn. He's still talking about the curses that God's going to bring upon his people for being disobedient. And you'd think that at this point he had mentioned every curse that could possibly be mentioned, that there'd be no more need to give man an incentive to be obedient by mentioning further curses. But we do find that the remainder of this chapter deals with further curses that God's going to bring upon his people for being disobedient. And these last verses from verse 45 through verse 68 really have to do with the utter ruin and final destruction at the last of God's people. And just as the earlier part of this chapter dealing with curses had to do with their Babylonian captivity, the latter part has to do with the final destruction of the temple and the city of Jerusalem in AD 70 by the Roman army. So we go into a different phase now of the curses. And as we have mentioned many times, these prophecies have a lesser and a greater fulfillment. Here, a greater fulfillment even than the Babylonian captivity is going to be described as we talk about the destruction of Jerusalem by the army of Titus. So in verse 45 he says, "Moreover, all these curses shall come upon thee, and shall pursue thee, and overtake thee, till thou be destroyed, because thou hearkenest not unto the voice of the Lord thy God, to keep his commandments and his statutes which he commanded thee." Now these two verses, 45 and 46, are really general statements about the wrath of God. And his statement here is that all these curses shall come upon thee, and shall pursue thee and overtake thee, till thou be destroyed. Showing that there's not going to be any way that they can escape this wrath of God, no way that they can escape these curses if they've done the things that God has told them would bring these curses upon them. And what are those things? To not hearken to the voice of the Lord thy God, and to not keep his commandments and his statutes which he commanded thee. This theme, this underlying principle, is found throughout the Bible, and in the book of Deuteronomy we've had it given to us several times over and over again. He wants you to hear his commands, and he wants you to do his commands. Hear and do. Those are the two things. Hearken and keep. Hear and do. These are things that are necessary for us even today. And anytime we are not hearing his commands, then of course we've automatically put ourselves into a position where we're not going to be able to do his commands. If we don't hear, we don't do. And it's no better to hear and not do than it is to not hear at all, because this means you've deliberately, flagrantly turned your back on what you know God wants you to do. So we must spend time at hearing, that is, at learning, at studying, at acquiring knowledge concerning God's commands. And then when we get the knowledge, we're able to get the wisdom to know how to apply these commands. And then we must spend our lives in walking in and in doing the commands of God. Keep his commandments. As Ecclesiastes says, the whole duty of man is to fear God and to keep his commandments. So the person who had these commands given to him in the Jewish nation, and who did not hearken and keep them, he could not escape the curses. They shall come upon thee, shall pursue thee, and overtake thee, till thou be destroyed. Very complete and plain statements here about what God's going to do. Verse 46, "And they shall be upon thee for a sign and for a wonder, and upon thy seed forever." These curses are actually going to be a stigma, a sign, he calls it here, and a wonder that's going to be upon them forever. And certainly this is so true today. Today the Jewish nation has been so persecuted and been so maligned by other nations and the rest of the world, until there are certain stigmas that go with just being a Jew, just being a member of this nation. And these things, as he said, would be a sign and for a wonder upon thy seed forever. Verse 47, "Because thou servest not the Lord thy God with joyfulness and with gladness of heart for the abundance of all things." Here's another general statement about the wrath of God. And this is because they do not have joyfulness and gladness of heart for the abundance of all things. Now, of course, God gives us all of our blessings. He gives us all the things that we now have. He allows us to have the abundance of all things. And in return for that, he expects not only thanksgiving, but he expects us to have a certain joyfulness and gladness of heart for these things. We're not to be of such a sad countenance. We're not to always be talking about what our terrible, terrible plight in this life is. We have a reason to be joyful. His people do. His people did then. We have a reason to have gladness of heart. But he says, because thou servest not God with the joyfulness and with the gladness of heart for the abundance of all things. And he's going to tell what that curse is going to be. But let's note that the things God wants us to do are not things that we should do with a reluctance or a complaining attitude. We say, I've got to go to church Sunday, and I won't be able to do what I'd like to do, or it's going to interfere with something, or I've got to cut my visit short, or I've got to do so and so. And when we start complaining and do not have the joyfulness and gladness of heart in the way that we serve God, and especially in view of the fact that He gives us all the things that He gives us, then we're doing the same thing that God has promised His curse to be brought upon His people. So it says, because thou servest not the Lord thy God with joyfulness and with gladness of heart for the abundance of all things, therefore thou shalt serve thine enemies, which the Lord shall send against thee in hunger and in thirst and in nakedness and in want of all things. And he shall put a yoke of iron upon thy neck until he have destroyed thee. Now this prophecy could apply, of course, to the Babylonian captivity, to several setbacks the nation had even before and since that time, but it can also apply to this next great prophecy that we're going to mention, which is the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70. But the contrast is, God who provides the abundance of all things, if we do not appreciate that, if we do not serve Him with joyfulness and gladness, then He's going to provide for us to serve the enemies. You don't want to serve God? Then you're going to serve somebody. You can serve your enemies, which He is going to send against thee. And while serving enemies, you'll not enjoy the abundance of all things, but you're going to have hunger and thirst and nakedness and want of all things. And this enemy shall put a yoke of iron upon thy neck until he have destroyed thee. That is a certain kind of oppression until you no longer are able to exist as a nation. Now this is a terrible thing to have happen, but he promised this thing just as surely as he gave the promise of any blessing. If you don't serve me with joyfulness and gladness because of the abundance of all things, I'm going to have you serve your enemies in hunger and thirst and nakedness and in the want of all things. And this enemy shall put a yoke of iron upon thy neck till he have destroyed thee. Then in verse 49, he gets more specific. The Lord shall bring a nation against thee from far and from the end of the earth, as swift as the eagle flieth, a nation whose tongue thou shalt not understand. Now here he's talking, no doubt, about the fact that the Roman army is going to bring this destruction upon the temple and upon the city of Jerusalem and the cities round about in Judea. This prophecy is also elaborated upon and given in further detail by a prophecy given by our Savior in the Gospels. Matthew chapter 24 is one place this is given. Also, it's in Luke chapter 21 and in Mark chapter 13. In Matthew 24, Jesus talks quite in detail about this event. In the first part of the chapter, Matthew 24, begin with verse 1. And Jesus went out and departed from the temple, and his disciples came to him to show him the buildings of the temple. And Jesus said unto them, see ye not all these things? Verily I say unto you, there shall not be left here one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down, showing that the temple is going to be destroyed, that there would be no stone left standing up on top of another. And as he sat upon the Mount of Olives, the disciples came unto him privately, saying, tell us, when shall these things be, and what shall be the sign of thy coming and of the end of the world? So actually they're asking three questions. When is this temple going to be destroyed? What's the sign of thy coming? And what's the sign of the end of the world? And so then Jesus proceeds to explain some of these things. And he tells them that in verse 6, there will be wars and rumors of wars. See that you be not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. Nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, but there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in divers places. And he says, all these are the beginnings of sorrows. And then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted, and shall kill you, and you shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. And then shall many be offended, and shall betray one another, and shall hate one another. And many false prophets shall rise, and shall deceive many. And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. But he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved. Now, the Christians who lived in Jerusalem at this time were given specific instructions as to what to do. And when the time came, if they carried out these instructions, then they would be saved. And that's what he's talking about here. If you endure to the end, the same shall be saved. And what happened is, this city was sieged by the Roman army. It was surrounded, and the Jews resisted. And the tendency was to hide behind the walls of Jerusalem and to seek security and protection behind the walls of Jerusalem. But God's people, the true Christians, were to leave the city. They were to flee out and do what seemed to be the unnatural, the unsafe thing to do. But in doing this, they would bring about their salvation or their preservation from this terrible siege. So Jesus goes on in verse 14 of Matthew 24. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall come the end. So the gospel was preached. It did reach all the nations. And then would come this end of the city, of the temple, and of the Jewish priesthood. Verse 15, when you therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place. Whoso readeth, let him understand. Now this abomination of desolation was the army of the Romans. Titus's army, standing in the holy place, is when you see this, then do the things you're supposed to do. That's time to act fast. He says, then let them which be in Judea flee into the mountains. Let him which is on the housetop not come down to take anything out of his house. Neither let him which is in the field return back to take his clothes. And woe unto them that are with child, and to give suck in those days. But pray that your flight be not in the winter, neither on the Sabbath. For then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, nor ever shall be. So he's showing here that they are to take immediate action. They are to leave. Don't go back home to get anything. Don't go into the house. You flee to the mountains. And this would be their salvation from the siege, the way that they would then be protected, the way that God had provided for his people to be protected from the siege. And it says, there shall be great tribulation. And except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved, but for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. And he is telling them specifically what is to be done. And then he says, behold, if they say unto you, he's in the desert, go not forth. Behold, he's in the secret chambers, believe it not. For as the lightning cometh out of the east and shineth unto the west, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. This could be talking about his last coming, or it could be talking about his providential coming in this destruction of the city of Jerusalem. Verse 28, for wheresoever the carcass is, there will the eagles be gathered together. Now, this is very interesting. We know the word eagles here means some kind of a scavenging bird. And where the carcass is, where the dead animal is, then the eagles gather, they flock around the dead animal. And so here he's talking about Jerusalem and the Jewish people. They're the carcass, and the eagles are gathered together, which is the Roman army, to bring about their destruction. And so in our verse 49 of Deuteronomy 28, he says, the Lord shall bring a nation against thee from far, from the end of the earth, as swift as the eagle flieth, a nation whose tongue thou shalt not understand. And the Roman standard was an eagle. And so Jesus spoke of the eagle, and this prophecy in Deuteronomy 28 also speaks of the eagle coming against them. Our time has expired, so we will close at this point. We'll continue this prophecy in the next lesson. Thank you.